Welcome to Energy Thinks, a podcast about how the oil and gas industry will lead into the energy future. I'm Tisha Schuler, your host and the CEO of Adam & Dean Energy. This year, 2024, I'm focusing on two essential ingredients for energy leadership today. The first is a vision of the energy future that your stakeholders, even the skeptical ones, will find compelling. And the second is how to execute on the nuts and bolts of that vision. And we cover both of these today, and you'll see why I was so excited to speak with Albert Gerges, head of growth at EQT. I wanted to talk to Albert because not only does he lead this component of the new ventures practice, but he also has a very clear understanding of where he fits into EQT's vision for the future. We talk a lot about that, and you'll get to hear how that translates to an executive doing this work on the ground. Albert received a BS in Business Administration, Management Information Systems from Texas A&M, and an MBA from the University of St. Thomas. Prior to EQT, he was VP of Commercial, VP of Strategic Development, and Director of Corporate Strategic Development at Williams. He also has had roles at Chenier. You can learn more about Albert's biography in our show notes. I think you're really going to enjoy our discussion around skill sets for base business workforce to prepare for the energy future. That was something I found really interesting. I hope you enjoy my conversation with Albert Gerges. Albert, welcome. Thank you so much for joining me on the Energy Thinks podcast.
Thanks, Tisha. And thanks for having me on the show.
So I wanted to talk to you because your CEO, Toby Rice, is well known as a vocal leader around EQT's vision of the future. And at the center of that vision is unleashing US LNG. So I'm interested to hear about your role with New Ventures. What's the role that you play in your workplace in executing on that vision?
Great. Well, great question, Tisha. I appreciate that. But let me start off about a little bit about EQT and talk about how we got to where we are today. Back in 2017, we became the largest natural gas producer in America. I think people are always shocked when I say that. They think somebody else like ExxonMobil or Chevron. But actually EQT, you know, we produce over 6 BCF a day of natural gas, which is a little over 5% of all the total gas production in the United States. So the New Ventures team was assembled to look at the next generation of projects for EQT beyond the wellhead in order for us to really reduce emissions. And we're focusing on things that are good for the planet and good for people and good for profits. All those things have to come together in order for New Ventures to make sense. One of our many initiatives is LNG, and we have a team that's looking at the Gulf Coast LNG and also on the East Coast as well. But in order for us to be, you know, successful in doing those things, we have to make sure that we're hitting those three things, that we are creating products that are good for the planet, good for the people, and good for profits. You know, we are a for-profit company, so we have to make sure that we're doing things that make sense. I would say one of the things that kind of gets me excited about working at EQT is being driven by a purpose every day. You'll hear Toby talk about purpose as well as unleashing US LNG. And really our purpose is helping others by providing energy security and lower emissions for the world. You might ask, like, why is that important? And there really is a direct correlation between energy and the quality of life. So simply put, if you want to help people with a better quality of life, you got to supply them with more energy. And unleashing US LNG is a way and a means that we can provide a better quality of life for people globally and reduce the emissions by displacing foreign coal. So that's really what we're trying to do. And one of our initiatives is bringing LNG to the market by allowing folks to have affordable, clean, and reliable energy. And I would say, you know, finally, I'm fortunate to work at a place where I know what I do matters every single day. And it kind of goes with my core beliefs as well, which is, you know, helping others around us and being able to secure energy for them.
Albert, there's a few things that I really like about what you said. One is I've gotten to work with you, so I know you, like your boss, are incapable of BS. And so this idea of the largest natural gas company in America, driven by purpose, and that purpose is to provide energy in a way that is sustainable environmentally, but also meets what we now know is going to be continued growing energy demand around the world, not just to raise people out of poverty into the middle class and developing economies, but just to meet the business as usual requirements of a world with more computing needs. It's just so cool that Everyone you talk to at EQT is consistent in these themes, and it gives me a lot of confidence in the authenticity and the direction of the work you're doing. Now, all of this has gotten more complicated lately because there's all this anti-ESG pushback, and EQT has one of the most aggressive net zero goals in the industry. And so I'm curious, how do you navigate that? You're in the new ventures. I don't know if your role is to take care of keeping your emissions house in order or lining up new net zero projects. What role do you play in this net zero? And how do you maybe rationalize it in the context of your core business?
Well, I would say, you know, first off is that we're laser focused on making sure that our own house is in order before we start, you know, being able to really help others and helping our customers and other folks around the world. So the first thing we really did was reducing our own emissions by 50% by replacing over 9,000 pneumatic devices. And pneumatic devices help us on our operations. And nobody asked us to do this. You know, we did this on our own. We replaced, you know, like I mentioned, 9,000 devices. It took us about 2 years. We spent $28 million, but that reduced our emissions by 50%, our own emissions by 50%. So looking in-house first, how do we organize ourselves and how do we reduce our own emissions? Was the first thing. So new ventures, one of our goals for the broader corporation is to get to net zero. And we do have a very aggressive goal. So we've made investments in companies like Teralytic. And what Teralytic does is real-time monitoring of soil data 24/7, 365 days a year. So there's no need to go take a soil sample and then take it to a lab and it takes you some time, you know, weeks to get it back and understand what's in the soil. But with these Teralytic probes, we're able to monitor and measure real time, the soil moisture, the salt, the nitrates, potassium, temperature, pH, CO2. So we actually understand what's happening in the soil. And we're looking at doing some agricultural projects to actually create carbon credits that will help us get to a net zero. Along with that, we've invested and implemented Context Labs, which I know you've had Dan Harpel on your show before. Brilliant mind that was the founder of Context Labs. And that will allow us to be able to have full life cycle emissions. So when we create these carbon credits, we'll have a platform that will be able to trace it from the generation to end use. So there's no double counting. It will be immutable data that is via a blockchain. So it's very transparent. You know, the industry needs to be very transparent. And you know, like Toby will say, the radical transparency. And we're creating that radical transparency within our modern technologies of creating carbon credits, using Context Labs to give us that full life cycle emissions. And being able to have it on a source to where people can see it every single day. The other thing that we're doing to make sure that we're staying on top of it is we initiated the Appalachian Methane Initiative, which is AMI, that will put satellites in the air that will be able to monitor methane emissions across our entire basins. So we know where we have issues and we can help others around us and help ourselves as well by being able to detect those methane, any types of leaks and act fast and get them taken care of. So we're really investing in our own house and then figuring out how we can help our neighbors as well by using Context Labs and using AMI to really decarbonize our own production. And I think the next mission after that, which always leads back to LNG, is now that we've taken this decarbonized production, how do we get this decarbonized production to the world? And that's where LNG comes into play, where we can bring this product to market via LNG and displace foreign coal and reduce emissions globally, because we can't just do what we're doing here in the US. We have to bring that technology to abroad as well.
Albert, you really painted a picture of how I like to advise companies on doing these things. And I'm really struck by the commitment to keeping the house in order, the radical transparency. No one's going to believe us. We have to demonstrate again and again. The soil probes is new information for me. I'm excited to learn about that. And then all of this in service to the cleanest molecule on earth getting exported, right? To everyone's benefit, to the benefit of energy, and also to the benefit of decarbonization. So you're really living that path. And I want to acknowledge, this has just never been harder. Like a few years ago, if we told our skeptical stakeholders we'd be doing all these things, they just wouldn't have believed you'd be doing all these things. And now you also have anti-ESG forces pushing back. Why are you doing this? You're just part of the problem. You're kind of playing these net zero games. A role like yours, which was coveted 5 years ago in the industry, everyone wanted to work in some form of new ventures, now is like, oh my gosh, you have to manage the base business. You have to manage all of these decarbonization expectations. And now you have to manage this political pushback. I wanted to talk to you because I think EQT is managing this, finding this sweet spot of being deeply committed to this path and not really taking flack for it. Yeah. You know, it's like, this is what we're doing. This is why we're doing it. But I wanted to give you a chance to talk a little bit about how do you manage those competing pressures? What have you learned along the way from being in the squeeze of everybody wanting to critique this path that you're taking?
Sure. That's a great question. And I get it often because ESG is something that I think the industry has really had in the past, and it's going to be here in the future. It's not going to go away. And it's something that we've embraced. We embrace the challenge of being more transparent and creating these sustainability reports and showing what we're doing on the environmental impacts, the social standards, and the corporate governance that we already have in our business, but packaging it in a way that people can understand and the ones that care can read it clearly. And so I think ESG has just been always a part of our business, and that it's just now gotten a little bit more highlighted and we're packaging it a little bit differently. I would say, you know, I think what differentiates us a bit is having conviction. And I think you've said that we're going down this path. You know, we do things that are for the long term and not for the short term, and that we know it's going to take time to some of these ESG initiatives to come to fruition. Same thing with some of these new venture projects and initiatives. These are long-term things that if you don't have a long-term vision, you'll fail and you'll fall apart within a year or two, and you'll see people abandoning their goals. But we kind of look at things in the long term and run different scenarios in our strategy and really thinking about how do we sustain these initiatives for the long term, so we don't look like we're faltering on our commitments to the environment, our commitments to our shareholders as well. So really, conviction is number one, and making sure that you have conviction within your management team to that we're going to take on these initiatives, and being transparent and making sure that people know that the industry has always been focusing on the environmental, social, and governance part of the business. Now we're just highlighting it. And you know, appreciate companies like yourself helping us have a voice and not letting other people take the narrative from us and tell the story for us. But we're doing that now with you and other companies. So just really kind of appreciate what you're doing as well, Tish.
It's easier to do today, I think, than it was when I started my business 8 years ago, because companies weren't comfortable. There was like a lot of stealth sustainability. You know, like we're going to do all these things, but we're not going to tell anyone because we don't really know how to be received. I really am struck by, we began our conversation with driven by purpose. And then we're in sort of mid conversation around the conviction, the importance of having conviction, because this gets hard and you can't fall apart and you're going to get critiques from all sides. And the conviction is what allows you to stay the course. And it is interesting what leadership entails now in the oil and gas industry, right? Like, these are real leadership traits to tie our business goals to things that have emotional hooks that will motivate and mobilize our employees and motivate and mobilize our strategies. I think it's so important, and it's what makes me confident that it will be sustainable. Because once we get our emotional hooks into our work, then we're going to overcome these obstacles. And there's no one more solution driven than an oil and gas person who has conviction and is facing challenges. Many companies are not as far along as EQT. So I want to help some of our listeners who are maybe earlier on this journey. They're facing that first pushback internally. So how do you work within the company? You're head of growth for new ventures. I'm sure you have to sell up or sell out within the organization. How do you ensure that you get buy-in and support for these projects that is durable? What's the process, or what have you learned along the way that companies earlier in the journey could learn from EQT's process?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, one of the major items is collaboration across the other departments. But first, they want to know, like, what are we looking at and what are we not looking at, more importantly? Because if you don't have a purpose and the criteria of the things that you're going to look at and not look at, you'll spend your time looking at 1,000 things and not progress any of them, because you'll be just overwhelmed with, there's a lot of ideas out there now and a lot of opportunities to invest in certain technologies and to look at certain, you know, opportunities that don't make sense for EQT to look at. So we say a no to a lot of things, but the things that we say yes to really make sense that we can actually have a competitive advantage and leverage something. So really defining what we're going to look at and what we're not going to look at up front is really important for a successful new ventures team. Also, you know, I mentioned it before, is we're really having that management conviction, because there's going to be rough times. Our base business is cyclical, and there's times that prices are high and prices go low. So are you going to be, you know, focusing on the long term and not really worried about quarter to quarter? which is, you know, something that we have to think about. And when we take on some of these initiatives, you know, these projects are 5 years out that we're working on now. So really setting that anchor that things are not going to be up and running in 18 months, you know, like a typical traditional energy project. These are some of these things take a long time for them to go up and running. One of the initiatives that we're involved in is the Clean Energy Hydrogen Hub in the Appalachian region called ARCH2. And in ARCH2, a lot of these projects don't come into service until 2028, 2030. So if you don't have conviction around the long term, then this is probably not an area for you to spend some of your resources and your time on, because new ventures is going to be long-term solutions for a lot of these things.
I love the themes that you're calling out. Picking a lane that clarifies what you're doing, but what you're not doing. So, because we did see a lot, like there's just so much to be distracted by, Sure. So having a lane that helps with the sorting, I think that makes a lot of sense. And then I like your articulating a theme that is becoming more confident, which is like, what is your competitive advantage? What gives your unique company a competitive advantage in this space? But that has to be paired with these longer time horizons. So that's sure. that we're not used to. So I think that makes a lot of sense. So now that you've been at this for a couple of years, I'm curious for you as a leader in this contentious space, what advice do you have for someone who was just appointed? I'm sure congratulations and condolences. You're now in charge of new ventures for a company that's never done it before. What advice do you give them?
Well, I would say that I want to make sure that you don't create any silos within your organization, because I think a lot of people do get attracted to new ventures and they want to be part of this team. But we know our bread and butter is our drilling business. That is what allows us to have a new ventures program and to leverage our core business to be able to help us decarbonize our own operations and production. And then we can do things for others after that. So what I tell people is to recognize your environment that you're working in and the company that you're working in, and making sure that you understand what the core business is and respect it, because it's what's allowing us to be who we are today and allowing us to have the opportunity to have a new ventures team that can look at other exciting things. But give props where the props are due. And that's really our operations team doing it day in and day out and creating for us a business that is known for being the best operator in the industry. So I always focusing on and give those folks those credit. That's really my number one advice for anyone else that's joining or starting up a new ventures team.
Yeah, don't get too cute thinking you're the belle of the ball, because like you literally will have no shoes if the base business isn't working its magic. I totally agree. And we have a lot of listeners who work in the base business but are inspired by or skeptical of. Actually, we have quite a few listeners who are skeptical of but interested in the future of the industry. And so I do love to have shout outs to all of our people who are focused on the base business, because we're going to need that for a really, really long time. And all these other things buy us runway around the future of our business by creating opportunities to decarbonize. So I couldn't agree more. So for those listeners, the most common question I get from our audience is, I am in the base business. I'm a traditional oil and gas person, maybe 1 year in, maybe 30 years in, but I want to be here. I want to be here as the industry evolves. So I'm curious, Albert, what skills do you encourage our workforce to develop to make them ready for all the things that are coming? What are you starting to see as most valuable for workers to be like mindfully curating in their skill set?
Sure. So the first thing I think about is the industry has really honed some of these skills for many years within our current workforce. The folks that are out there in the field, they have this resiliency to them and they have this grit to them. I always think about them on the construction side as well as like cowboys. They go and there's the next rodeo and they're traveling to the next thing. And they have a lot of resilience and they're good at dealing with changing environments, changing work areas. They're always moving around. And so that's built a good skill set that people need to recognize. Like, what do we have first? When you look at the workforce, you've got a workforce that's been created in this industry for many, many years that's built on grit and resilience. So how do you take that and evolve that to some of the new venture ideas? And really what I look at that and look for folks that have that ambition, a strong desire to do something or achieve something new. And a lot of the workforce has that already. You just need to drive it out of them by really anchoring on that purpose. When you have that purpose, you know that what you do matters and you have a part of a bigger picture and you're playing that part. So really thinking about ambition and having that higher level of thinking around what are the innovative things that I can add to my current skill set. So ambition, innovation, folks that can collaborate. And really, when you're collaborating, you're building this network of trust, because you really can't collaborate very well if you don't trust the people around you. Having those folks that have that skill set, a lot of them already have it. You just got to like help them explain it a little bit more. And a lot of people don't know they have these skill set, but you're bringing it out of them. That's really where good leadership comes into play, is really showing people how to articulate what their strengths are and the skill set they might have that they don't really recognize they have. I think we're really good, you know, here about, you know, people recognizing their weaknesses and how do you describe your weaknesses, but we got to flip that script a bit and really help people recognize what their strengths are and how they articulate their strengths. And I think that's where good leadership comes into play, where people can really start to think about, well, I am pretty good at that. And I do have a pretty collaborative, you know, nature in myself. And I work with other crafts and other departments and other people pretty well. So, you know, I think those are the things that I really focus on and think about as we think about the skills that we're going to need for the future.
Albert, I've never considered this before. So I'm going to just riff off of you for a minute, because I think it's really important, which is a lot of these things from our traditional engineering and construction. So you're in the field and it turns out that whatever, you couldn't drill where you wanted to drill. The landowner revoked permission. You got some kind of stop work on a stream crossing, whatever it is. Our folks know, okay, like this is the challenge. What are the options? And that I have never thought about the resilience and grit that comes from just our traditional business. Now we can apply that to the, sometimes the obstacles look different. It's in the permitting framework. It's in the opposition framework. It's maybe even in the investor expectation framework. But that mindset of, okay, this is just the latest obstacle and it's my job to figure out how to find the workarounds, and I'm going to do it through collaboration, through being grounded in my purpose. I think that's actually really important in helping also our today workforce understand that, like, in some ways, the themes are the same. The problems are evolving. Maybe they're even getting more complicated. But because we have such an optimistic and solution-oriented workforce, the more we can apply that grit, that resilience, the better. Is that in line with what you were thinking?
You nailed it. It's something that we've been able to see and really kind of admire from our workforce, is how they're not shaken around these things. Mm-hmm. And how do you bring that actually into the office? What can you learn from the field to bring it into the office as well? And being resilient. And I think that's something that they have, and really just kind of being able to articulate that a little bit more. So I think you nailed it and you described it probably, you know, much better than I can.
No, I actually think that's a really important idea. I'm going to spend some more time thinking about that, because that idea of what can you take from the field and bring into the office, because we have a lot of, particularly millennial and Gen Z workforce, has a ton of ambition, but ambition without resilience, ambition without grit is unanchored. And so I really like this idea of marrying some of that. And that's also a way to marry perhaps the generational experience as well. Pair ambition with grit, with experience. Stay tuned for a Both True.
Okay, here we go.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this idea. Well, Albert, I'd love to end on the same note I like to ask all my guests, which is, what are you most optimistic about?
I love it. Love the question. And really, the next generation of leaders is pretty exciting. We just finished up Sierra Week a few weeks ago, and being able to soak in a couple of the panels and see what the future leaders on stage are and what they're saying, it gets me excited. You know, leaders that don't have all the answers to everything, but have that development mindset that we'll figure things out together, I think is the greatest thing to look forward for in the future, is those future leaders that don't have all the answers, but, you know, they're going to assemble the right team and believe that we will figure it out. And we will figure it out. This industry has been around for a long time, and we're going to be around for a long time. So I'm pretty excited about that.
Albert, that's a great note to end on. Thank you for your leadership. Thank you for EQT's conviction. I'm excited to see where you all lead us in our industry next. And thank you for joining me on the Energy Thinks podcast.
Thanks, Tisha. Appreciate the time.
That's our episode for today. Thanks so much to Albert for joining me. I love talking to people who are doing the hard work, but are so relentlessly optimistic. It is such a theme of oil and gas, leaders. And I just love it. It energizes me for the work we're doing here at Adamantine and the work that our industry is doing. When it seems like everyone's against us and the path is impossible, we just keep coming back with more. And I just love it. I'd like to know what you thought, and you can reach out to me at energythinks.com. You can sign up for my weekly newsletter. You can also find me on LinkedIn. Please take a moment to rate and review our podcast. It helps other oil and gas employees find us. I'd like to thank my colleague, Kayla Chives, for making this podcast possible. Until next time, I'm Tisha Schuler, wishing you and yours happiness, prosperity, and good health.